Welcome, everybody, to episode number 5 of the Flannel Panel Conjugate Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Surratt, and on today's episode, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do kind of like an Instagram Q&A type deal where we talk about some different things rather than talking about one topic ad nauseum. So first of all, let me kind of apologize for those of you who care for the delay in putting out content. We had a very busy few weeks recently. I had both of my coworkers go into quarantine or isolation due to COVID-related issues, so I was running the show by myself, which on one hand is really neat because it shows that I'm capable of handling that responsibility and handling that workload, but it was also very arduous, even though like my job's not hard. Like, we're working 12-hour days, and we had groups every hour on the hour throughout the entirety of the day. And given the guidelines and protocols that we're following for COVID, each group had to be cleaned up after and like disinfected and sanitized after before the next group came in. So it made a lot of work for me. Like, I was not only coaching, but I was picking stuff up, putting stuff away, spraying stuff down, and wiping stuff down. So it was just a lot of work in a very compact amount of time, spread out over a very long day. So I really just didn't have the energy or the enthusiasm or the desire to do anything else other than work, eat, sleep, and train. And even training was something that like barely made the cut just because I don't have the energy for it. So hopefully we can get back to a little bit more of a regular schedule, you know, once a week or something like that. Yeah, that's where we're at for right now. So let's just jump right into it. So today we're gonna talk about some different Q&A topics that came up. I think I picked out, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4. I think I picked out like 5 different topics. There's definitely gonna be some crossover between them. But that just is what it is. So first of all, I got asked who were my influences when it came to strength and conditioning, and then perhaps even like powerlifting. And I'll just rattle off a list here. So like Nate Harvey, I think, is a huge influence of mine. I read his book, Conjugate You, and if you haven't read that and you're interested in conjugate or you're interested in either powerlifting or strength and conditioning, go check it out. It's a very simply laid out book, and it explains the conjugate method in a very simple and effective and efficient way. And it's really what sort of sparked my shift towards getting into a purely conjugate model, especially with training with athletes or training my athletes in the weight room. So if you haven't read it, go check it out. Definitely worth your time. You can download on EliteFTS.com. I think it's like $20 or $30. You know, 200 to 300 pages worth of content. So definitely worth a read. But yeah, Nate Harvey is a big influence of mine. Jim Wendler is another one. I ran 5-3-1 for myself for a very long time. I also ran 5-3-1 with my athletes for a long time. And I feel like, you know, it's a very simple program, but it's very effective. You know, really just is built upon the idea of hard work and pushing yourself to sort of your limits, you know, and finding what you're made of. You know, and I like the way that Jim thinks and the way he talks and the things that he has to say about training and his philosophy. So he was definitely a big influence of mine. Another one is Jeremy Frey. So Jeremy was my boss at my last school. He was also a world-ranked powerlifter. And he kind of taught me a lot about strength and conditioning, not necessarily from a programmatic perspective, but from like how to operate as a coach. I learned what to do and what not to do from him in a myriad of ways, you know, but he definitely instilled some values in me that continue on to this day. And so for that, he's definitely one of my influences. Dave Tate, I think in just sort of like a general global sense, he's had an impact on my perspective on training and coaching. You know, again, you know, being organized, pushing yourself as hard as you can, having a plan, having a training schedule, all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, Dave has put out so much content via his own channels and then via Elite FTS and his subsidiaries. You know, so there's no way that I think that you can be involved in powerlifting or in strength and conditioning and not know who Dave Tate is in some fashion or another. And then obviously Louis Simmons, I mean, you know, the godfather of powerlifting, the creator of the conjugate method. You know, Louis is a little bit, insane at times, I think, but, He's a very, very smart man, and you cannot take that away from him. He's a great marketer, self-promoter, promoter of his business and of his methods and all that kind of stuff. So he's been very successful in that regard. And obviously the conjugate method, you know, despite what you might think of it personally, has proven to be a very effective training method for both myself and my athletes. And a lot of people talk a lot of shit about the conjugate method, and I've mentioned it before, but people say that it only works for equipped, enhanced powerlifters. And like I've said before, that's definitely true. You know, the two definitely go hand in hand. But I mean, I have a population of 300 some odd student athletes, all of whom are tested via the NCAA and who do not lift in gear, who have seen great success with the conjugate method. So obviously it's a system that works very, very well when you know how to implement and apply it. So I'm sure there are more, and really, like, I don't think that you can go through life, you know, whether professionally or personally, and not be influenced by everybody around you. You know, I mean, the gym that I train at personally has a lot of great minds at it, and you know, those people really influence me on a day-to-day basis. Maybe not in a sense like where I'm conscious and aware of it, but you know, you become the people you spend time with. You know, and so if you spend time with shitty people, you become a shitty person, and if you spend time with good people, you become a good person and a smart person if you spend time around smart people, and strong if you spend time around strong people. But you know, I mean, everybody you encounter, you know, influences you in one way or another. So, you know, those five guys that I listed off, you know, I think those are my primary influences. Those are the ones, they're sort of like the hubs or the anchors, you know, of my coaching and lifting career. But there are definitely obviously other people that have had an impact on me that I just don't, you know, I don't have a name for. So moving on, another question was, what's the difference between training athletes versus training lifters? And I think that there is a degree of difference. I don't think it has to be an extreme degree of difference. I think that when it comes to training athletes, some people get this idea that it's like this mystical secret thing that only certain people are privy to. You know, there's like gatekeepers, you know, or key holders, you know, to this world of collegiate strength and conditioning or athletic development, you know, and it's really not that complicated. And I've talked about that before, so I'm not going to get into it that far here, but one thing I think is really important is the intensity at which you're operating with your athletes versus your lifters. So when you're training an athlete, the lifting, the strength training, is secondary or tertiary or even further down the list in terms of their athletic development as compared to their sport practice. So like if you're an athlete, your primary concern is competition and then practice and then realistically probably school, and then, you know, below that is weight training. Whereas like with a lifter, especially a competitive lifter, lifting is your sport and lifting is the primary means of competition or execution of competition. So you can operate at a much higher intensity with less, how do I say this, with less concern for athlete safety and health. Now, what I mean by that is not that I'm not concerned about the health and safety of my lifting or my lifters, but their sport is lifting. So if they get hurt in training, they're getting hurt in practice. Or if they get tired in training, they're getting tired in practice, which is going to translate over to their sport, which is lifting, which is very different from, I don't know how I'm trying to say this. With lifters, you can go harder because that's their sport, because you want to train them for their sport. With athletes, you don't want to go quite as hard, in my opinion, because they still have other things that they need to worry about, like practice. And if you're at the collegiate level, you know, you have classes and school stuff. So you need to modify and pay attention to your intensity. Nate Harvey was recently on a podcast that I was listening to, and he was talking about the fact that, like, with athletes, you can take them to like 90% of their one rep max, and they can still get benefit from it. Whereas, like, with a lifter, a dedicated lifter, they may need more intensity to get something out of it. You know, and I'm not going to tell you what intensity to operate at. You know, that's a decision that you have to make for yourself as a coach. But, you know, that's one thing to keep in mind is the intensity at which you're operating. Another thing that goes hand in hand with intensity is the volume. So again, lifters are competitive in the sport of lifting, whereas athletes are competitive in basketball, baseball, football, track, softball, whatever, you know, whatever sport you want to talk about. So athletes need to have enough energy or enough resources available to them to still be competitive in practice and still be competitive on the field. And the same is true for lifters. Like, obviously you don't want to smoke somebody in training and fuck them up so that they can't compete, you know, but with athletic development, with athletic performance or weight training, like, you have to be cautious of how much volume you put on these kids. Because if you put too much volume on them, and then you take into account the volume of weight training plus the volume of practice plus any sort of competitions coming up plus, you know, probably really poor recovery, you know, when it comes to sleep and nutrition, because we're dealing with college athletes here, you know, 18 to 20 somethings, you know, so you got to be very cognizant of the volume that you're putting on these kids. And again, I'm not going to tell you how much volume to put on somebody, but you just need to be aware of it. A big one is the language that you use with athletes versus the language that you use with lifters. Now, and that's not to say that every lifter is, you know, anatomically knowledgeable, you know, or possesses a working knowledge of his or her anatomy or physiology. But most athletes are going to be more conscious of their own anatomy and the way that the body works, or the physiology, as compared to an athlete. So if you tell a lifter to keep their lats tight on a deadlift, a lifter may understand that and understand how to do that. I've had plenty of athletes who have no idea where their lats are. I've asked athletes multiple times, hey, point to your lats, and they point to their traps, or they point to some other body part. So if you tell an athlete to tighten their lats or engage their lats on a deadlift, they're not going to know what the fuck that means. And so when it comes to coaching athletes, you need to be able to break things down to a very simple perspective, very simple level, and keep things as direct and succinct as possible. Whereas with lifters, like, yes, you still want direct and simple cues, but you might be able to cue them in a slightly more technical way as compared to an athlete. Again, with athletes, like, yeah, you got to take into consideration the amount of technical proficiency that you know, your average athlete has in the weight room. You know, it's obviously my goal as a strength and conditioning coach to create as much technical proficiency as possible with my athletes, you know, because, like, I want them to be good at lifting. Maybe not necessarily just for the sake of being good at lifting weights, but, you know, so that they are skilled in it and so they don't get hurt and so they get the most benefit out of what they're doing. You know, whereas, like, where a lifter, you know, and obviously lifters have different stages of technical proficiency, you know, like, there are experienced and or advanced, and there's novice, and there's, you know, intermediate, and there's everything in between. You know, but most competitive lifters, most dedicated lifters are going to have a higher sense of technical proficiency and technical awareness than your general athlete or your average athlete. So you need to be conscious of how you speak to an athlete versus how you speak to a lifter. And that's one thing that I've noticed, and I'm guilty of it myself, is that with young coaches, there's this desire to try to prove how much they know. And so they say a whole lot of words, and they don't really say a whole lot, if that makes sense. They talk a lot, but they don't say a whole lot. And it's like this desire, again, to prove how smart they are, to show how much they know, and try to buy authority, you know, in exchange for, you know, intellectual currency. And I'm guilty of it myself. You know, sometimes I find myself, like, just talking way too fucking much, and I got to reel it back in and just remember that I have to provide these, like, succinct, direct, you know, and very intentional cues, you know, that are sometimes not even relevant to actual lifting. Like, you know, there's this idea of internal versus external cueing. You know, an internal is, like, looking at the body and what the body is doing, whereas external is, you know, how the body operates in space, I think, is how you break that down. And I remember I was working this private sports performance job one time, and I was trying to teach this kid a kettlebell sumo deadlift, and he couldn't figure it out. And I finally told him to put his butthole on the floor, and he did. I mean, he didn't actually put his butthole on the floor, but, you know, he widened his stance, he sat his butt straight back, and he sat down like he was going to plop his butthole straight on the floor, and it worked, you know. And, like, I've used some pretty outrageous cues in my time. But again, that comes down to understanding your population and understanding the language that you need to use to speak with them. You know, some teams respond very well to, like, some very hardcore or aggressive coaching, and some teams need just, like, some coaxing, you know, so you just got to be aware of what's going on around you with your teams. Finally, with training athletes versus training lifters, I think your exercise selection is important, because, again, you got to look at competitive versus general prep. You know, so when you pick exercises for a lifter, everything has to be dedicated towards improving the competition lifts. Whereas with an athlete, you're just building general strength, you know, so it's just general physical preparedness. You can still develop maximal strength, which I've talked about before in previous episodes. But, you know, with an athlete, your exercise selection is going to be dependent upon what you have available and what the kids are proficient enough at to handle. And, you know, ultimately what your goal for that movement is, as compared to like where a lifter might be like, hey, you know, we have a very specific purpose for selecting this particular bar or this particular movement. And there's reasoning behind it. And it's not just to build general strength. So you got to be cognizant of that when you look at training athletes versus training lifters. And I'm sure there's a whole host of other things that you got to take into consideration. You know, you got to look at like training age, actual physical age, temporal age. You know, gender is important for both lifters and athletes. I don't think it's such a huge issue, but it still is an issue that you got to be aware of. So yeah, I think that's kind of covers training athletes versus lifters. Another question I received was, how do you train with or around pain? And this is something that is personal to me because I deal with chronic lower back pain on a pretty constant basis, and it ebbs and flows. Some days are really bad and some days are not, and most days are just kind of like uncomfortable, but it's manageable. And the first thing I would say is seek medical advice. Now, there's a lot of controversy around seeking medical advice when it comes to lifting and pain, or lifting with pain, because most doctors are going to be, in my opinion, hyper conservative and tell you not to lift anymore, you know, mainly to cover their own asses, in my opinion. You know, like, no doctor wants to be that doctor who says, yeah, you're fine, go ahead and keep lifting, and then someone gets fucked up and then comes back around and says, hey, like, you told me I was fine and I'm not, and now I'm gonna sue you. You know, so from a liability perspective, I think most doctors are gonna be hyper conservative and tell you not to lift, or to lift in a limited fashion. But I still think it's important that you seek out medical advice and medical insight, because, you know, while a lot of lifters, again, might have, you know, awareness of physiology and anatomy and may be able to, you know, self-diagnose something to a degree, you don't want to get into the habit of self-diagnosing issues, you know, and then develop a bigger issue and ultimately end up with a more severe injury than you might have had otherwise, you know, or end up getting really, really hurt. So first and foremost, seek medical advice. You know, don't take anybody else's advice. Don't go to the internet and say, hey, this happened to me. Like, don't go to some fucking message board and say that you popped a hammy or did this or did that and ask for advice. Like, go see a doctor. You know, cover your ass, go see a doctor. Or a PT or something like that, but go seek medical advice. Then my next point would be to find an analog or a parallel to the movements that cause you pain. So I think the first thing you have to do is find out what hurts you, like what causes pain. And then from there you can explore and experiment and find out what doesn't cause pain. And then you have to figure out how close you can get to that. Like, let's look at the competition movement. So if straight bar back squatting causes you pain, you know, maybe you explore and experiment a little bit and you find that, like, just as an example, maybe like a safety squat bar to a box is more manageable for whatever reason, you know. So you're close enough to the competition lift that as a lifter you're still developing some sense of specificity when it comes to your training, but you're not inciting or causing pain and then, you know, ultimately setting yourself up for failure or for a setback. You know, so again, find what hurts, find what doesn't hurt, and then find how close you can get to what hurts without actually making it hurt. So in my opinion, again, you know, when you train for lifting, everything that you're doing is being dedicated or directed towards the building up of the competition lift. So the squat, the bench, and the deadlift if you're a power lifter, or the snatch and the clean and the jerk if you're an Olympic lifter. Or if you're a strongman, you know, or a CrossFitter, whatever competition movements you're doing there. But don't be afraid to train variations. I think a lot of people get really scared of stepping away from the competition lifts, especially in powerlifting. You know, like, people get scared to step away from the straight bar. Now, if you're a conjugate person, you know, you probably spend a lot of time away from the straight bar anyway, so it's probably not that big of a deal. But I've noticed that, like, and forgive me to anybody who's listening, but like USAPL lifters, you know, more like raw guys or raw lifters, are not so keen on stepping away from the straight bar or from the competition lifts when it comes to training. And I think that's a disservice that they are doing unto themselves. Or if you're a coach, that's a disservice that you're doing to your athletes. Because it's okay to train variations. Like, you're not going to lose your technical skill or your competition skill in a straight bar if you squat with a safety squat bar for a cycle in order to mitigate some pain. Or if you do a trap bar deadlift versus like a straight bar deadlift, you're not going to lose that technical skill. You may have to refresh it, but it's never going to go away. And you're mimicking the movement pattern close enough that you're still going to maintain it to a degree, again, that will allow you to, you know, as you approach a competition, you know, refresh it through, you know, a mini cycle or a micro cycle. You know, and I think it's important that depending on where you're at in your competition schedule or in your, you know, in your cycle, that you allow yourself the opportunity to use variations to minimize pain so that you can push adaptation as much as possible with as little pain as possible, and then save the pain for the competition. You know, if you're going to hurt, hurt when it matters, not when it doesn't matter. You know, training is training. And that's not to say that training is not important, but if you're competing and if you're a competitive individual, the competition is what's important. You know, and yes, the training is important because it's the training that allows you to be successful in the competition. But don't expose yourself to unnecessary pain. Like, it's just stupid. There's nothing hardcore. There's nothing, you know, savage about it. You know, like, I think people get this idea in powerlifting that, like, oh, I'm hurt, but I'm going to grind through it, you know, so I'm a beast and I'm savage and I'm fucking hardcore and all this bullshit. You know, it's like, no, you're just fucking stupid. You know, like, pain exists for a fucking reason. And not, that's not to say that, like, there's not a time and a place to push through pain, you know, but you have to be selective about it. You know, what's really important? Again, is it, you know, are you fucking worried about, like, you know, if you're 12 weeks out from a competition, are you worried about, like, oh, well, if I don't squat with a straight bar, like, I'm going to lose it, you know? Like, who fucking cares what's happening when you're 12 weeks out? Like, if you're 4 weeks out, okay, maybe that's time to fucking buckle down, take some ibuprofen, and slap some Icy Hot on it, you know? But, you know, pick your poison, or, you know, choose your battles, you know, pick your battles, you know? So again, seek medical advice, man. If you're hurt, if you're banged up, go fucking see somebody. Go see a chiropractor. You know, I mean, a lot of times I found that simple adjustments or simple, you know, manual release therapy, you know, just something simple can actually be super effective, you know. Or if you're hurt, fucking take some time off. Again, it depends on where you're at in your cycle. You know, if you are a recreational lifter, and that's not to say that you can't be serious about it if you're a recreational lifter, but if competition isn't your job, you know, and it's not your livelihood or it's not your identity, you know, and you just do it because you love lifting weights, like, think about the long term, you know, think about the long game. Like, what's going to fucking matter in 20 years? Like, the ability to bend over and tie your shoes or pick your kids up off the ground or to play with your kids, or, you know, your RPE of 6, 5 by 8 RP, you know, sleeved high bar bullshit straight bar squat. What's really going to fucking matter? You know, take some time off and allow your body to heal. You know, and I'll be the first to say that I've been stupid at times in my life and I've said, no, like, I'm going to keep fucking grinding through this, you know, when I should have stepped back and said, okay, I'm fucked up and I need to relax a little bit, you know. But, you know, but you've got to do that. And if you're not going to do that, you have to be willing to pay the price. You have to be aware that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You have freedom of choice, but you don't have freedom of consequence. You know, you can choose to do whatever you want. You can choose to grind through pain, but doesn't free you up from the consequences that come after. So that's that. So training raw versus training equipped. Differences, pros and cons of each, et cetera, et cetera. I think the first thing I want to talk about is the technique involved in both. So obviously, raw lifting has its own technique. And I think you see a larger degree of variation in technique in raw lifting than you do in geared lifting, because in raw lifting, your leverages are different, or you're obviously, you don't have the support, so you can change your leverages. That's what I'm trying to say. You can change your joint angles with more freedom than you can in gear, especially like the squat and the bench. you know, so raw has its own technique, and like I said, you see a large variation in technique raw as compared to a smaller degree of variation or deviation in technique when it comes to gear. And the reason for that is the reason that everybody looks fairly similar in gear is because you have to squat a certain way, you have to bench a certain way. And when it comes to deadlift, like, you need to be technically proficient, you need to be dialed in, and like, you have to do certain things right. But I feel like there's a greater degree of flexibility with the deadlift as compared to, like, especially the squat. So like, let's talk about the squat. So the squat in raw squat has a high degree of freedom. You know, most of the time you'll see people sit back, load the hips and the glutes and hamstrings first, and they descend. Maybe their knees travel forward, maybe they stay vertical. You know, maybe they have a wide stance, maybe they have a narrow stance, maybe a medium stance, toes forward, toes turned out, you know, flat shoes, lifter shoes. You know, there's all sorts of options when it comes to, you know, high bar, low bar. Again, there's tons of different options when it comes to squatting raw. And I don't want to say that any one version or variation is better than the other. I think when it comes to raw, you really have to find out what works best for you. So like for me, when I squat in gear, like, I'm a wide stance squatter. But when I squat raw, which is never, I have to bring my feet in. Because if I don't, if I try to squat the same width that I squat in my gear, I'm going to blow my hips apart. You know, so I just can't do it. So if I were ever to squat raw, which I don't think I ever will, because fucking multiply or die, you know, I would have to bring my stance into, you know, probably like a shoulder width stance or just outside, as compared to, like, not an extremely wide stance, but a good wide stance when it comes to gear. But again, so yeah, raw has a lot of freedom when it comes to technique selection, technique execution, as compared to like gear, where, so like, you will see some variation in the gear. And I think it's the degree to which people are mobile or flexible. You know, I think the greatest degree of variation you'll see when it comes to gear is, you know, the width of a stance. And that just comes down to how people are built. Some people are built to wide stance squat, some people aren't. Some people still try to squat wide even when they shouldn't. Like, I'm a big proponent of, and this is something I learned from Harvey, was that when you squat, like, you don't want to be so wide that your knees cave in. And I see that a lot when it comes to powerlifting, especially geared, is that these lifters try to get out into these extremely wide stances to try to maximize the benefits of the gear. Like, you know, the wider you are, the more material you're recruiting, the more material you're incorporating into your squat, and the less range of motion you have to go through to execute, you know, a quote unquote parallel squat. But some guys get way too wide and you see their knees start to cave in, and I'm just waiting for somebody to fucking blow an ACL or an MCL or something like that, or, you know, tear a meniscus. You know, but like, when you get that wide and your knees cave in, like, you lose power. You know, like, in my opinion, when you squat, you should only squat so wide that your knees are stacked above the ankles. Like, obviously, there's going to be a little bit of, like, you know, internal rotation or flexion, whatever you want to call it. You know, a little bit of, what is that, valgus, when the knees cave in? I think there's always going to be a little bit of that, you know, especially as you get up into the heavier weights. But, you know, for the most part, as a rule of thumb, you know, you should have your knees stacked over your ankles when it comes to your wide stance squatting in gear. In gear, you have to sit back. Whereas like raw, if you want to drop straight down into it and rebound your hamstrings off of your calves, then fucking go for it. And if you can maintain that position and you can maintain tension, like, go for it, man. But in gear, you have to sit back. You have to load the briefs and you have to load the suit. And if you shift forward, that gear is going to shoot your ass forward out of the bar, and you're going to have a big old issue on your hands. And I've seen it happen. You know, it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much in gear. You know, one little, you know, an inch or 2 inches can make a huge difference. you know, when it comes to doing things right or doing things wrong. And I've seen guys shift just a little bit and lose it. You know, like, they get popped forward or they cave in. You know, so you have to sit back, you have to load the gear, because if you don't, like I said, you're one, setting yourself up for risk of injury, but two, you're not getting the benefit of the gear. Like, sit back into it, get as much material incorporated into the movement as possible, and then go from there. Now, benching is another one where there's a big discrepancy between raw and geared. Raw, you can take the bar down as fast as you want, let it cave into your chest, and use that breastbone as a catapult to launch that bar back up. You know, or you can go slower. You can do a slow eccentric with a good pause and then a strong concentric. You know, you can go wide grip, you can go close grip, you can go medium. You know, you can touch high on your chest, you can touch lower on your chest. Again, it all just comes down to leverages and how you're built. Whereas with gear, you have to be a technician. You have to find the groove in a shirt. Now, there's a little bit of wiggle room, but that's going to be dependent upon the gear. You know, one shirt versus another is going to have a different groove, or a more forgiving or a less forgiving groove. You know, and that just comes down to the individual piece of equipment. You know, but with training the bench in a shirt, like, you have to be dialed in and you have to do it right. That's not to say that if you do it wrong that you're not going to get the lift, but it's going to be exponentially harder. And I'm a victim of that. Like, it's really easy to try to raw press, you know, in a shirt, to let the elbows come out wide, you know, come straight down, and then try to press it up raw. But with the weights that most guys are handling in a shirt, like, you can't do that. And then you're defeating the purpose of even wearing a shirt. Like, if you're going to try to raw press in a shirt, like, you might as well just press raw. You know, in a shirt, you have to take the wide grip. Now, wide is a relative term based on your, you know, limb length and your dimensions and your proportions. You know, but typically you see a lot of guys with their index finger, you know, on the ring, which is the widest legal grip that is allowed in competition. You know, and that's to maximize, you know, leverage, minimize range of motion, you know, most effectively load the shirt, the chest plate, and all that kind of stuff. But you have to do that kind of stuff. You really don't have a choice. You know, if you're in a shirt, you're pretty much locked into operating or benching in a very specific way. You know, there's always going to be a little bit of differences between, you know, one lifter to the next. You know, Tim Hensley is this great bencher that we have at our gym. You know, and the way that he benches is very different from how I bench, you know, based on how we're put together. You know, I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's very different. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, there are nuances to his bench versus mine. You know, he's more of like a, you know, he's going to come down, he's going to touch, and then he's more of like the type of guy who drives himself away from the bar and tries to wedge underneath it, as compared to me. And I'm still learning. Like, I'm not saying that my way is right, you know, where I try to, like, actually press the bar away, as opposed to, like, wedging myself underneath the bar and pressing myself away from the bar. You know, so it's just subtle nuances like that. That may not make sense to somebody who's not in gear, you know, but somebody who's in gear and has done it and been experienced with it, you know, I think would understand. So technique is huge. There's a huge difference between raw technique and geared technique. And if you're going to bounce back and forth between the two, you have to be able to adapt your technique to the specific lifts that you're doing, whether you're raw or geared. You know, like I said, my raw stance squat is very different than my geared stance squat. So just something to keep in mind. Skill mastery is huge. You know, I think a lot of dedicated raw lifters have this idea that you can just hop in gear and all of a sudden you're going to squat 300 pounds more than your raw squat, or you're going to bench 300 pounds more, or you're going to deadlift, whatever. And to a degree, I think there's some validity to that, but you have to learn the gear. Like, you can't just hop in a shirt and all of a sudden expect to bench 500 if you're a 300-pound bencher. Like, you have to learn how to use the shirt. You have to learn where to touch, how to tuck, how to arch, how to belly up. You know, you have to learn to be patient under the amount of pressure, because if you've never been in gear, the amount of pressure that you experience, whether you're squatting, benching, or deadlifting, can be absolutely insane. You know, Dave Hoff said it one time, I think, when somebody asked him, like, you know, what it felt like to squat 1,200 pounds, and he said it felt like drowning. And that's true. You know, I mean, I've never squatted 1,200 pounds, so I don't know what that feels like. I've squatted 1,055. You know, but when you're coming down and you have that much weight on your back and your knees are wrapped and your belt is on and your straps are up and your suit, you know, I have one of the Leviathan Ultra Pros, you know, so like the suits that lace up on the sides, you know, when everything is cinched up and there's a lot of material binding onto you from different angles, different points on your body, it's a lot of pressure. And, you know, a lot of times guys, I think, are riding that line, especially as they're squatting and benching. You know, because of the eccentric portion of the lift, they're riding that line between consciousness and unconsciousness. Like, I know there have been a couple times where I've been really, really close to passing out. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you try to hold on for as long as you can and hope that if you're squatting, you're close to depth and, you know, that you hit depth and you stand up before you pass out. Or if you're benching, that you can touch and you can press before you pass out. Because, like I said, it's a very fine line between maintaining consciousness and going to sleep. So that's part of that skill mastery. But like you have to learn how to use the gear if you're in gear. Whereas like raw lifting, I won't say that raw is easy, but it is. Like raw is easy. I'll just throw it out there. Raw is easy. Grab the bar, lift it, be done with it. You know, now there are nuances to it. There are subtleties to it. You know, I'm sure that, you know, my USAPL buddies would be like, oh, well, raw is not easy. You know, geared is easy. Blah, 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 blah. Like, who fucking cares? sorry, just talking shit. You know, but you have to master your skill. Like, geared lifting is a skill. You have to learn how to do it. You cannot just jump into gear and go. Like, you have to learn. And that was something that I had to learn when I first got into gear. Like, the first time I grabbed a shirt, like, I had seen people bench, you know, in videos, I'd seen people bench in shirts, I'd seen people squat in suits. And then I trained with a group of guys that were all multiply guys. But the first time somebody gave me a shirt, I was like, oh, this is just going to be like elastic. It's going to be like a slingshot. And boy, could I not have been more wrong. You know, like the first time I put on a shirt and tried to like stretch the chest plate without any weight, it was like, uh-oh. Like that thing just binded up right away, locked up right away. And it was just like, okay, I'm in over my head right now. I'm out of my depth. So geared lifting is definitely a skill that you have to master. And you have to become a master at it. In order to be competitive, in order to be proficient, you have to master gear. Like, that's not to say that you have to be a master at it right away, because obviously everybody who starts is going to be a novice, right? You have to be a novice at some point. But you have to master your gear, because if you don't, you're only so strong. And, you know, the thing about geared lifting is that, you know, I don't want to say that the material or that the gear does the work for you, because that's not true. I mean, it definitely assists you. Don't get me wrong. You know, I could not squat 1,055 raw. There's no way. I could not even get close. I probably squat half that. You know, so your gear definitely assists you, but you have to know how to use it. You know, you have to know how to sit back and how to open up and how to be patient, or how to, you know, stretch the chest plate on a shirt while trying to tuck your elbows while you're descending, you know, all that kind of stuff. You have to, and then not even just like using the gear like in the lift, but you have to know how to set your gear up. You know, like, how do I want my gear set? How do I want my strap set? How do I want my strings on my suit set? How do I want my knees wrapped? How do I want my wrist wrapped? You know, like, how much tension do I need in my straps? You know, all these are things that you have to take into consideration when it comes to gear. You know, and like, there's obviously similarities or parallels in raw. Like, you know, if you're a wrapped raw lifter, like, you know, there's a degree to which you want your knee wraps cranked as opposed to being a little bit more loose. Same thing with your wrist wraps, you know, like, or if you have a belt, you know, how tight do you want your belt? You know, some people cinch that fucker down, you know, so it looks like they're wearing a corset. And other people keep it a little bit looser, you know, so it's all personal preference. But when it comes to gear, like, you have to dial that stuff in, because, you know, with the weights that are being lifted for most geared lifters, like, so like for me, okay, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but this is just from my personal experience. Like, if my shit is not right, you know, and I'm getting up to that 800, 900, 1,000 pound, you know, weight limit on squat, like, my stuff has to be dialed in. And if it's not, like, I'm putting myself in danger. Because if I'm going to squat gear, I'm going to squat with that support. I need it to be done right. And it has to be done right. And if it's not, like I said, you're setting yourself up for danger. You're going to get yourself fucked up if your shit's not right. So you have to master your gear. And that takes time and it takes practice. And that's one of the differences between raw and gear, is that, like, I think that you can become an experienced raw lifter very quickly. You know, and some people can handle gear very quickly and adapt to it very quickly. And some people are just built naturally to lift in gear, you know, leverages, proportions, dimensions, all that kind of stuff. Some people are just built to do stuff right, or have the right technique, and it just carries over from raw to geared, you know, but there has to be that level of mastery that comes with it. So I'll stop saying mastery now. The last thing we're going to talk about today is just training general population individuals. So the first thing that you got to think about is the goals. So if you're an athlete, your goal is performance. And I use the term athlete to describe both like collegiate NCAA athletes or professional athletes or high school athletes, as well as lifters. Your goal is performance. You know, there's a dedicated, directed, and organized outcome to the training. So there's a specific purpose to the training. Whereas like with Gen Pop clients or Gen Pop individuals, there might not be a goal, or there might not be a specific goal. Maybe it's just, hey, I want to get stronger. or I want to get in better shape, or I want to improve my quality of life. And those are specific goals. But what I mean by goals is, like, so for me, like, I want to squat 1,100 pounds. Like, I've squatted 1,055 in training. Like, obviously, I still have to do it in competition, but I want to squat 1,100 pounds. That is a specific goal. I want to bench over 500 pounds. I want to pull 750 or above. I have very specific goals, and I know the things that I need to do to get there. You know, whereas, like, with a general population individual, you may be in a situation where it's like, I just want to improve my quality of life, you know? I just want to be able to move better. I want to be able to tie my shoes, you know, without getting out of breath. I want to be able to play with my kids, all that kind of stuff. So you got to think about the goals that are, you know, that are at hand, and then how to reach those goals. Another thing you got to think about is the general ability or proficiency of a general population individual. Most people walking into a gym who have never lifted before, who have very limited experience lifting, probably don't have high technical proficiency. You know, and so if you're a trainer, if you're a coach, you're going to have to, you know, I don't want to say dumb it down because that's not the right word, but you're going to have to meet them at their level. You're going to have to, you know, simplify things. That's the word I'm looking for. You have to simplify things, you know, so that they're executable in a safe and efficient and effective manner. You know, and then from there, like, you know, lifting is just a skill. You know, and humans can learn damn near any skill you teach them. You just have to teach somebody how to do something. So yeah, technical proficiency and ability are two things you got to take into consideration when you're training general population individuals. And you always have to err on the side of simplicity. And I do the same thing with my athletes. And it's a tough lesson to learn, like, as a young coach or a young trainer or a new coach or trainer. Like, you have, like, it's a lesson that you have to learn, because you have all these, like, grand ideas of things that you want to do with people. You know, like, that you want to do with your team, or that you want to do with your clients if you're a personal trainer. You know, and so, like I said, there are these grand goals that you have in mind, and like, oh, I want to do this movement, I want to do that movement. Like, I saw this thing on Instagram, it looks really cool. You know, but you have to err on the side of simplicity, because if you throw somebody under a barbell, like, there's no fucking way that I would put somebody, like, under, you know, like, a new client or a new individual, a new lifter or a new athlete underneath, like, a giant bully cambered bar versus heavy bands. Like, they're not proficient enough to handle that movement. They're not strong enough. Even with lightweight, you know, or, like, even if we use the bar plus, like, micro minis, they're probably not proficient enough in that movement or in the skill of lifting to handle that movement. So always err on the side of simplicity, you know, like, always cover your ass and make sure that people are capable of executing what you're asking them to do. And then finally, the last thing I think that you want to think about is the volume and the intensity. Okay, so let's say you have a gen pop individual who comes in off the street, walks into the gym and says, hey, I want to get in shape. So you have to assume, again, that they don't have any lifting experience, and so you probably don't need a whole lot of volume. You know, I mean, like, everybody knows about newbie gains. You know, like, the first time you start lifting, like, you know, you see these gains, you see these improvements, like, immediately, because your body is in this, like, crazy state of shock, you know, where it has to adapt very quickly to the stimulus that's being placed on it. You know, it's in this, like, massive state of alarm, and it has to adapt very quickly, you know, and then obviously it slows down over time. But, like, you know, a novice gen pop individual versus, like, an advanced athlete or advanced lifter is going to need a very different amount of volume. You know, I don't know who came up with the idea, but there's a theory out there, or a training methodology out there, that uses one set of 20, you know, on multiple exercises within a training session, and, you know, basically argues that that's enough volume to incite change. And I think with a novice population or a general population individual, that might not be a bad idea. And then the intensity, you know, how much can your athlete handle, or how much can your individual handle? Do they need to go balls out right away? And that's where I think a lot of, like, CrossFit boxes fall flat, is that they take these gen pop individuals, you know, untrained individuals, and they throw them into these workouts. And, like, I understand that there's RX versus scaled in CrossFit, you know, in CrossFit, and that I think most CrossFit boxes and most CrossFit coaches do a really good job. And I think most people have enough of a sense about themselves to say, I'm not ready to do, like, the RX yet. Like, that's too much for me. But there's always that, you know, case where someone gets thrown into an RX class, or someone gets thrown under a bar when they're not ready for it, or under too much weight, and they're just not ready for it. They're not strong enough. They're not in shape enough yet. They're not fit enough for it. You know, they don't have the adaptations necessary to survive under that. You know, and that, you know, most of the time you walk away okay from a situation like that, but there's always that chance that you're going to have an injury or that someone's going to get hurt or you're going to have something happen. You know, and you want to avoid that as much as possible. I mean, yes, lifting can get people hurt. Lifting is inherently dangerous, especially when you get into gear and you start squatting 1,000 pounds, you know, you start benching 600-700 pounds, whatever, you know, like there is risk involved. There's risk involved in doing a push-up or, you know, a burpee or a muscle up. Like anytime you engage in physical activity, physical exertion, you know, on an intense level, there is a risk of injury, and you can never completely negate it. You can always just try to mitigate it as much as possible, mitigate and minimize. So again, I can't tell somebody like this is how much volume somebody needs or this is how much intensity somebody needs, because that's just case by case. You know, when it comes to my athletes, you know, like, yes, I prescribe volume and I prescribe intensity. But again, I always err on the side of caution, like especially when it comes to volume, because volume is typically what fucks people up or what makes people sore and tired as compared to intensity. But again, you have to modulate or you have to regulate, I guess, your intensity. You don't want too much intensity right away. And that can be on your main movement. It can be on a secondary movement, or it can be on accessory movements. You know, you need to regulate and modify your intensity based on the population that you have, you know. And that's where the art of coaching comes in, is like, yes, there's a science to it. And okay, as you know, as a strength and conditioning coach in a team setting, like I'm going to prescribe a general or universal volume, you know, for my teams, you know, like, so if my women's soccer team, like, let's say we do dumbbell bench 3x8, everybody's going to do 3 sets of 8, you know, and then it falls onto me as well as my athletes to make sure that we're at an appropriate intensity. You know, like if I see somebody who's undershooting it, I'm going to tell them to go up. If I see somebody who's grabbed too much weight and they're struggling, I'm probably going to tell them to go down. You know, so that's just where your coach's eye comes in. And that's, you know, it can't be more true than in a general population case or situation. Like you have to protect people and you have to mitigate risk as much as possible. So that's going to wrap it up for today. We're already at almost an hour. Well, 45-ish minutes. But this was a really good one. I really liked doing this one. And I managed to get it done in one sitting. I didn't screw up at all. So that's a win for me. But anyway, I appreciate you guys listening. Feel free to shoot me a DM at JimberJacked or at Flannel Panel Conjugate. Check me out. Check out Instagram, all that kind of stuff. If you have any questions, please hit me up. And as always, don't waste the pain.